confidence grease my tie.
I don't know.
Now that she's gone out of my life, who's gonna make me feel the way she used to do? Yeah, now that my love is overdue. Now that my love is overdue.
The alert level in your region or a neighboring region is red. To curb the spread of COVID-19, gatherings with family and friends are prohibited, and travel between regions should be avoided. In red zones, it's also forbidden to leave your home between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about the specific measures addressing the situation. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Time.
C. C is for...
Cauliflower.
Confusion. Creation.
Pickle. K is for...
Kitten.
Camp.
C, wait. Sandroof. C. U, unbearable.
U is for underground.
Oh, yeah.
Umbrella.
T. Trite.
Tremendous.
Torment.
Tire.
C. K.
I can't think of a U one.
T.
T. F is for famous.
Fun. Fumble. M is for Montreal.
KUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune into the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, and every second Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio, or if you need to access past programs, email prison at ckut.ca.
Yes, rehabilitation.
I wonder if you know what the word means. Do you? It comes from the Latin root habilis. The definition is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
Number, you weren't a man, you want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. The law. When they hang my husband, is that just...
Good evening and welcome to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm Virginia and I'll be your host for today. We have a full show for you today. We'll be airing a long interview with our inside correspondent Muti Ajamu-Asebru and his fiancé Raquib Bey. In the interview, they talk about romantic relationships across prison walls, the impact of COVID-19 on prisoners and their loved ones, and how their political organizing brought them together. But first, some news. On Saturday, February 6th, prisoners at a prison in St. Louis, Missouri, protested against ongoing inhumane treatment and conditions at the jail. Prisoners broke several windows on an upper floor of the many stories high prison. They chanted and held signs, lit things on fire, and threw objects out the window. More than 50 prisoners on at least two floors of the jail participated in the protest as supporters gathered outside the prison to chant and wave in solidarity with the prisoners on the inside. According to prisoners who got information out after the protest, many of them had tried to rectify the situation through the prison's grievance system in December and were told by guards that their grievances weren't going anywhere. One of the prisoners wrote, quote, "We feel like prisoners of war in a foreign land in hostile territory. Because of our blackness or ancestral ties to Africa or Latin America, we are being treated less than human. We are dying at this prison in unheard of numbers and being intentionally infected at alarming rates." The prisoner also wrote, quote, "This is genocide." The Ontario government announced early in February that they are installing ion scanners in 10 provincial prisons, despite the fact that ion scanners, which have been used for years in the federal prison system, have been shown to be faulty. The devices, which detect trace amounts of chemicals on visitors' hands or clothing, have been known to give false positives, which most often result in family visits being canceled. Family members of prisoners who have had to deal with the scanners in the federal system report having one set of clothes that they keep in plastic bags and use solely to visit loved ones, and yet still being refused visits due to false positives from ion scanners. There have been total lockdowns in 3 different prisons in Quebec in the last few weeks. The jail for women in Quebec City, the provincial jail in Saint-Jérôme, and here on the island of Montreal at Bordeaux Prison. Bordeaux is locked down in its entirety. There are about 900 prisoners stuck there. We have been told that there are trailers set up in the parking lot for staff to sleep in instead of going home. Prisoners have been locked down for almost 2 weeks, with little to no access to time outside their cells, and therefore almost no access to contact with the outside world. We have received phone calls from worried family members and from prisoners hoping to spread the word about their plight in the hopes that something will change. Lockdowns have been the government's preferred method for dealing with the pandemic in prisons, but these conditions are guaranteed to cause emotional stress, raise tensions inside, and cause harm to prisoners. We received a call last week from someone in Bordeaux who told us that all but 2 prisoners on his range had tested positive for COVID-19, and the news is reporting that 77 of the 897 prisoners in the provincial jail have tested positive as of this past weekend. About 75% of the prisoner population in Bordeaux have not yet been sentenced. They are awaiting trial or awaiting court appearances. As far as we know, Quebec has not approved a plan to fast-track vaccinations for prisoners or for release of prisoners to curb the spread of COVID-19. At this point, we encourage family members and prisoners to continue to relay news to us from the inside. We will be sharing that news on our Twitter feed, which is at Prison Radio Show, and we are happy to share audio reports as well. In terms of public support for prisoners in Bordeaux, there was a car caravan of supporters who drove to the prison on Sunday to honk and make noise for the prisoners in lockdown. Attendees reported more than 10 cars of supporters and confirmed that prisoners were able to hear them. That's it for our news. Up next is our interview with Muti Ajamu-Asebro and Raquib Bey. Muti is a regular correspondent of the show, often calling in his commentaries from the Pennsylvania State Prison System, where he has been incarcerated for decades. This time, we got to ask him some questions and were joined by his fiancée, Raquib. We talked to Muti and Raquib about their relationship, about COVID-19 behind bars, and we asked what advice they might have for others navigating love across prison walls. We hope you enjoy the interview. So my first question is, can you each introduce yourselves for our listeners? I know a lot of people will have heard Muti's voice on our show before, but maybe if you can both introduce yourselves, that'd be a good way to get started.
My name is Muti Ajamu-Asebro.
My name is Raquib Bey. Most people call me Quiba.
Can you each say a little bit more about yourselves? Like, Muti, how did you end up in a place where we're talking to you? And Raquib, how did you end up in a place where we're talking to you?
I end up in prison. I'm in Frackville State Prison because the state accused me of committing a crime in concert with some other folks. Though it was 5 of us, those who were charged, we were all children at the time. And one of the children, in order to save his life, falsely implicated me to get a deal from the prosecutor, who was at that time an actual criminal, unconvicted, then later convicted for the crimes he committed during the prosecution of my case. And after so many years of appeals and so forth and so on, here I sit now on the precipice of returning to society.
So I'm originally from Pittsburgh, the Homewood area, which when I grew up there was primarily black people. When I was 8, I moved away from Pittsburgh with my mom and my older brother to Philadelphia. We lived in Richard Island for 2 years in North Philly. And our last year there, we lived in Germantown. And when I was 11, we moved back to Pittsburgh to the historical Hill District, the lower part of the hill, which indigenous people here we call Soho, but those outside of this community, normally just buyers or colonists, call it Uptown.
Part of the goal with this interview today is to talk about your relationship, and I wanted to start off with the story of how you two met each other. Do you want to share that story with us?
So, my work, I'm a human rights and social justice advocate. I have background in doing work for fear and just housing, anti-gentrification work, but more importantly, my main focus of work is doing, I'm an urban agriculturalist, which means I'm an urban farmer that makes business with activism. So in 2011, I founded a youth program called Mama Africa's Green Scout, and the basic mission is to teach.
This is a problem. Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Brackville.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
To teach black youth and their families how to grow food, gardening, urban ag, community responsibility, and development, and African-centered culture. And we started that April of 2011. And being because I have a background in activism, I would get invited to meetings in our community for Urban Ag. And I found myself being the only black person at the table, and decisions was being made for Urban Ag in black neighborhoods like Homewood and The Hill, and we didn't have no input. We were being left out of grants. Even simple supply grants, where larger white-led urban ag organizations was getting supply grants and thousands of dollars, and we're just grassroots. They were giving us gift cards for $25 for seedlings. But I'm hearing this story over and over again. So with that being said, once again, you know, they were making policy decisions. It was mostly white people at the table for urban ag policy for neighborhoods like Homewood and the Hill District, but as well, they were teaching in our schools to our children. They were teaching our elders. And these people that were teaching farming and gardening didn't look like this, and they were in our community. But I'm hearing it from over and over again in the years, right? So June of 2015, I got like-minded individuals who were black growers together, and we had our first meeting for collective that we formed, and we were all activists as well, the Black Urban Gardeners and Farmers of Pittsburgh Co-op. And at that first meeting, we made some goals and objectives. One, what neighborhood that we wanted to work in. Even though we all had various projects in different neighborhoods, we decided to work in Homewood, which is the east end of Pittsburgh, a 6,000 resident group of mostly black people where there hasn't been a grocery store in 25 years. With that being said, most people are familiar with food desert. However, we use the word food apartheid because it describes a neighborhood that is systematically challenged for the black and brown people, where there is no access to food, healthy food on top of that. Normally, there are mom-and-pop stores where the food is processed and often unhealthy. So we knew we needed a farm and a farmer's market, and we knew we needed a grocery store. Fast forward 5 years later, we are meeting our objectives. So my human work, human activist work, and social justice work in urban ag led me to meet Nikki, and he can tell you how.
Well, I mean, on my end, likewise, I'm a human rights activist, and I was a child advocate even when I was a child, and under the leadership of Sister Nadia Williams, and under her tutelage, she taught me how to organize African people, teach African people, and coalesce with non-African people to actually get the job done. And I think it was 2016, 2015, United States Supreme Court came down with a decision that all the children under the sentence of death by incarceration had an illegal sentence and must be re-sentenced. And so therefore, I started gearing up and focusing on reaching out so that I could hit the ground running with people of like mind. And so, like I always do, I go to the war room, which folks refer to as the law library, every day. And going, I read magazines, and I picked up 2-3 periodicals, and I'm going through them, and I see various articles. And I see this article about Mama Africa's Green Scouts. And I said, oh, well, I would love it. First, I read it. And I said, man, this brother's brilliant. And so I had to read the article 3 times because, like, when you go there, you press for time. So you read read a piece of it one time, you go back again, you read it again, and so forth and so on. But anyway, I finally got to read it, and I was like, this brother's brilliant. And then, like, the third time I read it, I seen a picture. And I said, damn, this is not a dude, this is a sister. And so I said, damn, I'm going to reach out to her like I do all the time. It's something that I've been doing all my life, like reaching out and networking with other African people. So I wrote her, reached out to her, and told her that I wanted to establish a chapter of Mama Africa, Mama Africa's Green Scouts, in Philadelphia. And so she hollered back at me. And, well, actually, she didn't holler back at me. After I wrote, she didn't holler back. So then I got the phone number. I got my sister, Mama Roz, to get contact information. So I called her, and she answered the phone. And the rest, as they say, is her story.
So on my part, that was Pittsburgh Magazine, where the brilliant Hal Klein wrote an article about me, about Mama F. Green Scouts, and he actually had the photographer do the photo shoot at our Mama F. Green Scouts, and that article was published September 2018. So moving forward, the end of January of 2019, I used to work for an organization called Grow Pittsburgh, which was one of the leading urban ag organization, one of them here in Pittsburgh. And I'm off for like 2 months, and the letter came, and my supervisor had texted me and was like, we're having a staff retreat. Do you want me to bring it there? And this was at the end of January. And I said, sure, I'll be there. And I didn't go. So he mailed it to me, and I actually got the letter February 4th, which is my born day, my Earth Day, and I was packing to go to a conference that's called PASA that we have here in Pennsylvania every year. Anyway, and I looked at it, and I said, I don't know this person or anyone in the penitentiary, and I threw it in my suitcase. When I got settled to Lancaster, PA, for this hotel, I read it, and I was a little perplexed, right? And I didn't even read it all the way, but I remember he signed a journal, and I said, well, I know this person, and this is a nice looking woman. So, and I never wrote back. I didn't write back, and it was on a Sunday in March where I got a call, and I never answered my phone, but I answered it because I seen it with the Philadelphia number, and I do have relatives in Philly. So I answered, and it's him calling me. And I apologized to him for not reaching out for the article, you know, reaching out that he had responded. And I told him, if you write me, I give you my word that I'll write you back. And he did. And I wrote him back. And here we are.
So I want to get back to this story of your relationship in a minute, but I have two questions first. One is for Raquib. Can you talk about, on our show, we talk to a lot of people who are in prison, but we don't often talk to people who have loved ones in prison. And so I'm curious,
we have 1 minute left.
If you can talk a bit about the experience of having a loved one in prison and what kinds of experiences you've had to go through in order to be able to visit Muti or have regular phone calls and keep up a letter correspondence, all of that kind of stuff.
Before I got to know Muti well, I Googled his name, right? I could call him after I received his second letter. And I found pieces of work that he had done for Prison Radio. And the first one that I listened to was done in June of 2017. And it was a piece he written and recorded with you all on reentry. And I was impressed, wow, what a brilliant man. And this is it verbatim. He talked about women. He talked about something people visiting, if they dared, something like that, right? With that being said, it is challenging.
Thank you
for using
the curious. Goodbye.
You'll call back. Okay. It's challenging to have a loved one in there. You know, they're not the only ones on time. Muti has been in prison, kidnapped for 39 years and 8 months. So definitely his sister, Mama Ross, and his son, Sherrod, has been doing this time with him. But it is challenging. COVID didn't make it any better. I last got to see him in person on February 7th, actually when I was at the PASA conference, his sister picked me up in Lancaster, and we drove down there to visit him. So it is challenging. You know, I haven't seen him since February 7th, and we were scheduled for a visit in March, but they canceled it because of the pandemic. Yes, we do have video visits every week. I'm not live on his video visits, I do. And I enjoy those. I get to talk to him every day. But challenges are, you know, limited times to speak with him. However, we work it out, you know, as a couple. We work that out. COVID is challenging because prisoners have it worse than we do for COVID. They don't have an hour. He can only come out an hour a day right now. Maybe that's changed. He's more exposed to this virus, this deadly virus, than the rest of ours. Like, I can work from home 90% of the time. You know what I mean? But I do have to go out there. But I don't have to be around a whole lot of people if I don't want to. Sometimes he doesn't have no choice. Then we, you know, I know that the staff there are like neo-Nazis who are real ambitious towards black and brown people. So then there's that worry. Even before COVID, of course, there's anxiety and we were worried. And now there is COVID. But if having a loved one locked up on the outside, it is worry. Is he eating properly? Which, in general, even before COVID, prisoners aren't being fed properly as they should. There's water concerns. There's toxic environment concerns, you know, safety concerns. So, yes, it is a challenge. It is a challenge and it's difficulty of having a loved one behind bars, being kept behind bars, but it's the challenge of COVID-19 as well.
Muti, I have a slightly different question for you, and you've talked about this a little bit in some of the pieces that you've recorded with us over the years, but how are your experiences of learning about dating and learning about love, how are those experiences maybe different from people on the outside?
One of the things that I've learned about love, if you will, for African people, and then more specifically African people held hostage in America, is that you have to redefine, for African people, right now we're engaged in a struggle for national liberation. We're not even seen as human beings in America. So the first thing is we have to understand that we're human beings first, and then we have to make everybody else, the world, respond to us as human beings. And then once others begin to understand that we're human beings, then we can fight for lesser things like folks seem to get caught up in, like civil rights. In order to be in love, I've learned that you first have to define what love is, because America, clearly America doesn't know what love is. And in fact, they refer to raping children as pedophilia. Peda meaning child and philia meaning love. Now, to rape a child is no form of love at all. So clearly America doesn't know what love is. So the first thing that I discovered and I had to do was redefine or define what love is from an African-centered view. And like everything else, you have to go back in order to move forward. The concept is called, in West Africa, is called Sankofa, which means go back and fetch it. In Northern and Eastern Africa, it's called Benu, which means the same thing. Go back and get that which was lost or that which was stolen from you. And so when you go back and find out, like, what did my ancestors view love as, they had a lot to do with energy. And energy is something that's indestructible. Likewise,
this is a call from Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Brackville.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Energy is indestructible, so too is love. And I noticed that every time that I was lifted into love with a woman, there was always this amount of immense energy. Not necessarily like most people talk about how when you quote-unquote in love in the beginning, you have all these endorphins and so forth and so on. That's a part of it, but I'm talking about something bigger than that. It extends well beyond that, something that it lasts even when you're not even clicking, an energy that's so bright and vibrant that it lifts you up irrespective of your environment and the circumstances under which both of y'all are functioning under. And so I had to redefine love first. And my definition, my redefinition of love is living on vibrant energy, basically an acronym. and why that works. I wrote a 9-part series on love to really understand what it is, the position that I take. And I did lots of research on it. And one time, I was a facilitator for National Issues Forums for Drexel University, and we did things for other schools as well, Temple University, University of Pennsylvania, and a lot of liberal arts schools, all-girls schools in Northeast Pennsylvania. And one of the things I used to take these surveys, and I would always ask people this question. I would ask them, how many people, how many times your mother, let me see the hands of the individuals in the class, how many of you, your mother, your father, your grandmother, your aunts, whoever raised you, your guardians, the adults in your family, how many of them ever told you what love means by definition? And there's never any hands go up. And usually when one or two hands go up, and we talk about hundreds of thousands of students over the years, and usually when a hand goes up, it's because they misunderstood the question or they reinterpreted the question because they felt offended because I asked them, because I basically challenged them to show them that their mother and father never actually defined for them what love is, and it's something that all of us use on a regular basis. But when put to the test to ask to define it, some people get offended because you're actually taking them out of their comfort zone. And what I discovered is Americans are filled with those type of words that I call lexical placebos, words that you use every day, you emotionally attach to, but really they don't mean anything. Or what they mean, they don't mean what you think they do. And then when asked to actually define what the word means, you find yourself pressed to define it. So the first thing I had to do was define the word. And once I defined the word, I realized that, okay, this is what love is. And so now when a woman shows up in my life, I'll know what I have. And so now I know how to love and who to love. And from that point on, I seen that I could actually help people who've never been to prison before love, because, you know, I always say that in America there's prisons on both sides of the fence. The little prison is the prison that I'm in now, and the big prison is on the other side of the fence. And what I notice is that people in America, particularly African people, are struggling to love simply because they don't know what love is. But once you give them a good insight as to what love is, then they can begin the process to actually love. Also, too, you have to keep in mind that on the plantations of America, we were taught not to love, particularly other African people. And so we have to relearn the process of love in order to love. And in loving, one of the main challenges of loving, or actually the physical part of not being able to touch your significant other when you want to, that's a challenge. But one of the, I think, an advantage is you actually get to develop relationships with people outside of the so-called traditional methods. And by that I mean words become priceless. And when you want to express what you feel and what you are thinking, you have to do so with words, and you have to use words that are descriptive so that you move out all of the possibilities of somebody misunderstanding what you said, because you only have a little bit of time. You basically dealing with each other in increments, phone calls, Zoom calls, visits. Sometimes visits are 3, 4, 5 hours long, but still you always under the clock. And so you value time. Time becomes a priceless commodity. And so you're always pushing to get it right the first time. And so when you deal with one another, you always want to say something, for me, in the shortest words as possible so that it's understood, so that we can use the time, an additional time, to talk about or to build on the concept of love or other things that we may be dealing with. And so there are pluses and minuses. Most people think that they are super duper minuses of loving in prison. There are their challenges, but they avail you to other opportunities to develop, where people in this quote-unquote free world seem to never have time to do. At least they think they don't. But if you want to really be close to somebody, you need to take time out to develop the relationship. And most of the times I find that you have to develop the relationship outside of the traditional method. And when you do that, you come up with things that are much more fulfilling and much more rewarding than the so-called traditional method.
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and online at www.ckat.ca. We are in the middle of an interview with Muti Ajamoa-Sebru and Raquib Bey. Muti is a longtime correspondent of the Prison Radio Show and is currently incarcerated in Pennsylvania. Raquib, your political focus has been very much on the land. And Muti, I know your focus has been a lot on prisoner justice, although a lot of other things too. And those two things, land and prisoner justice, feel like very central focuses for Black liberation in America. And I'm curious if you guys could talk more about like how having shared politics has affected your relationship.
Sure, it has added on, you know, because it's all in the universe, it's all metaphysical, the synchronicities. So my background was not court restorative justice, or more commonly known as criminal justice reform, and we can elaborate on that. This is not my background at all. Maybe 8 years ago, my cousin gave a panel on the school to prison pipeline, right? That's about it for me. Now, with that being said, loving Muti, being a relationship with Muti, I sought out to learn more. When we met, I didn't even know what a juvenile lifer is. And I learned a lot from him. I reached out to other organizations, like Death by Incarceration organizations, which Muti coined, to learn more. So now I see reentry work through our reforming work. And it's because of Muti, definitely. So this was not my background, and I'm learning just like everything else every day.
So we understand the concept of land. In West Africa, it's called Asaseya, which means the great land or the great mother. The great mother, that is the land. So that's one of the concepts that we build on and that we strive towards. For us, it's real simple. Mother Earth is the mother of us all. We all tied to it. And to abuse her is to abuse ourselves. To take care of her is to take care of ourselves and our children and our children's children. And anything else or anything less is uncivilized. In America, they hold up these people as heroes. They call them the founding fathers. Well, in our circles, we call them the fondling fathers because many of them were pedophiles, they were rapists, they were lynchers, they were castrators, and the like. And so for us, we know that they call George Washington the father of the nation, and that he was a freedom fighter. We know, in fact, that he enslaved over 400 Africans. So he didn't have a bone of freedom in his body. And in fact, there's a story where he lived in, I think, Mount Vernon, Virginia, and he took of his 400, him and his wife, old Martha, who enslaved over 400 Africans, he took 9 of those enslaved Africans to Philadelphia, which was then the capital of the United States and where the original White House was. And he took 9 of them to Philadelphia, and one of them, Ona Judge, this magnificent, dynamic freedom-fighting sister, she took her freedom. And this devil, George Washington, devil personified, he used all his personal political powers to put out a national manhunt to re-enslave this system, and he failed. He failed time and time again. There's nothing he could have done. He'd done everything he could to re-enslave her. Pennsylvania had a law that if an enslaved African was in Pennsylvania for 6 months, you had to freedom. So what this devil George Washington did, this anti-freedom character, what he did was just before the time man ran out.
Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Brackville.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Just before the 6-month time span ran out, so that he wouldn't have to free these 9 Africans, he would send him back to Virginia. And then
set
the clock again, and then bring him back to Philadelphia so he can continue to abuse and use them, you know, in terms of knowing who's the true freedom fighters and who are the oppressors and enslavers is important, and it's all tied to the land.
And we're still fighting for freedom. You know, mass incarceration against black and brown people, because those are the majority of ones who are incarcerated, overly incarcerated, and like E.T., actually innocent, where there's evidence to prove it, and it's ignored for decades. We have political prisoners as well. The mistreatment of people in prison, but not just that, even outside of prison. We're still fighting for land access in 2021. We are still fighting for land access. We are still, even though we have made open roads here in Pittsburgh, Forever Black Growers is always a fight. We wanted to have a voice at the table in 2015. Now we have that. We have shown them through. Now it's time for our own table, our red and black table, red, black, and green table, to free the land and to free the people. Not that period.
That's what excited me so much about Mama Africa, because when I reached out as the founder and executive director of Juveniles R Us.
This is a call from
Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Brackville.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
As a child advocate, I wanted Juveniles R Us to link up with Mama Africa's Green Scouts to establish the chapter in Philadelphia so that we could have the merger of child advocacy, where she focused on bringing the adults to the children, and I'm focused on bringing the children to the adults. So I figured with that, we couldn't miss. And everything that we do is always tied to the land. I had to do a support commentary for one of my comrades, Bonnie. And one of the things that I mentioned in the commentary was that we wanted to link up with our sister city in Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi, who have a whole sovereign food movement going on. They actually elected the mayor based on using the land to grow food and use the food as trading to teach the people how to grow their own food so they could be independent, where they couldn't battle with billionaires and multimillionaires who sought to buy elections. They used food and say, listen, we want to teach you how to eat, feed your children, your children's children, and use this as a political dynamic to unify people and to get things done from a political perspective. So I'm extremely excited.
Rick Weeb, you've talked about feeling a bit, you know, anxious about Muti and the situation that he's in inside, and I'm curious if that is connected to his politics and him being an activist, if being an activist makes you more of a target in prison.
Of course it does. You know, after COVID happened, he wrote an article, right? And I shared that article. And the sister, who is a part of another court story for justice, she wanted to use quotes about COVID inside prison. And she asked me, do you think he would mind? We can keep him, you know, anonymous. So with the threat of retaliation, I already knew the answer. Muti is an apologetic about his beliefs, what he knows is the truth. And yes, use his name. So yes, it does make him a target. You know, it's not just against, you know, those of them who aren't black and brown in these neo-Nazi concentration camps. Sometimes they look just like us. And we call that neo-colonialism, white power with a black face. So it's threats from those on the inside and the outside.
My thing is reprisals, their retaliatory nature to try to maintain their oppressive regime. That, I call that occupational hazard. It comes with the territory. You can't let any apprehension you may have about doing the right thing, about fighting for human rights, you can't let that stop you from doing what needs to be done. The people that come, that retaliate against you, that's their nature. They don't want to be uncovered. They don't want you to expose the corruption. Because they stand on corruption, you expose it and remove it, snatch it from under their feet, their rules, their tyrannical rule is going down. Oppressed people are rising. Black and brown people, and to a lesser degree, poor white people, they're rising. because they're becoming educated about who is what and what's really going on in America and throughout the world, and the relationship of what's going on in America to the struggles going on all over the world, in Africa, to Far East Asia, to Near East Asia, the struggles going on in Europe, in Ireland, struggles going on in South America, in the Caribbean, all over the world. We're beginning to link the thread of commonality of oppression, how when those of us who understand white supremacy, we understand by its very nature, it's really not about color. It's about a few white people controlling the masses of white people to use them as fodder to separate the masses of people of color who represent the majority on the planet Earth, to separate the people of color with poor whites, to separate them and have us fight one another while the few control and pull the strings of the many. They control most of the land. They control most of the resources. And it doesn't have to be that way. Folks are waking up. And because they're waking up, beginning to coalesce and network with one another, those who are the few, the so-called elite, they're not elite, but they think they are, they're going down. And as they descend, the freedom fighters ascend. And so it's a beautiful time to be conscious in America. It's a beautiful time to be in love in America.
We just found out, it came out earlier in the week, that Bill Gates is now the largest farmland owner in America. How is this? And whose land? So there's concerns about that. You know, we have concerns about that. When we as black people have had our land taken away for us for decades and hundreds of years through colonialism. But the way Lucy and I just expound on what he said, the way we move is one, because we have a massive love for our people, our community, and want to do the right thing. That everybody doesn't have that. Some people come in and with a pretense as if they want to do the right thing for the community. We move by the 42 divine laws of Ma'at, but we recognize there are people who may even try to sit at the table with us who rather move with the 48 laws of power. But that's not what we do. That's not what we can do. Our human rights work or social justice work without more moving in accord to what our ancestors would want us to do.
You guys wanted to talk about how the pandemic has affected your relationship. And I feel like you got into that a little bit earlier, Raqui, but if you both want to talk about that a little bit more, I imagine it is much harder to see each other in the context of COVID-19.
What I noticed, there's inside and there's an outside. Real quick, the inside is I'm seeing brothers drop every day with COVID and what's being done. I've done multiple commentaries for the show, so any of your listeners want to know about that, they can go to the commentaries. But one of the things that I see, and I love Ship, is that I see the strain that it puts on Quiba, whereas she happened to be like a surrogate teacher for the children. We have two. And also do the work she does for Max and Bub, and then other ventures as well. And so I see all of that, and I see the stress and the strain, and oftentimes I have to remind her to not do so much. She bites off 15 to 20 projects, and I told her it should be more like, you know, 8 projects, so that, you know, because you spread yourself so thin, and I can see the stress level. So we have to basically remind each other of what we're doing and what we're up against and how right now this is a time like no other time, not just in America, but all over the world. And so seeing those things and understanding that we have to move a certain way, part of that moving a certain way is taking 15 steps back, take some deep breaths and recalibrate and say, okay, we're not going to do this, we're going to do this. We're not going to do this, this, and this. We're going to do this, this, and this. Learning how to move with a mask on your face. That's become a challenge, you know, and now it's sort of like we good to go now, sort of like a football helmet, you're used to it. So it's just, you know, those challenges represent, you know, more challenges, and we're so used to challenges and surmounting challenges that for us it just becomes just another thing to hurdle or surmount or run through or go under or go around.
It is, and the challenges in getting through them aren't always easy, but our love gets us through them.
We are truly gifted in where we are, in our love ship, and how this thing continues to unfurl. And I'm just so excited, and it's just going to get greater and greater as we move forward.
My last question, if you have a little bit more time, is there any advice that you would have for other couples who are in situations like the one that you guys are in?
Yes. You have to know who you are as an individual and as a collective. You have to be tied and rooted in what we say original culture. Because in your culture, every people on this earth has a culture. You have to use the values of your culture, the principles of your culture. And you have to know where you fit in your culture. And use your culture to an advantage. Every people on this planet uses culture as a healing, as a guide, as a compass. And you need to do that. Understand what your culture is. And anything in your culture that heals you, gravitate towards it. And anything, foreign objects that exist now in your culture, you have to expel it and move away from it, change it, alter it. Communication is the number one thing of all. You have to be a communicator. Most people say loyalty, most people say love.
Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Brackville.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Most people say loyalty, most people say love, most people say fidelity. All of those things are important, and all of those things are a must. But number one is communication, because in order to comprehend all those other things, you first have to communicate. Because if you don't communicate, a lot of times you might not know that y'all have different definitions of what love is, or you have no definition at all. It's just a lexical placebo that you've been taught or trained to use as a young person, and you've been using it all your life. And then soon somebody challenge you to actually tell you what it means, you don't know. So those things, communication for not just couples in prison, but couples, period. Communication has to be number one. You can communicate anything, any challenge, any problems, any disagreements. You have to communicate it. When you hold things in, it deteriorates. You know, not mind readers, you can't read each other's minds. So you have to communicate. Communication, and more communication. My favorite is the second principle of Kwanzaa, which is Kuji Chagaliya. It says we deserve the right to define ourselves for ourselves instead of being created and spoke for by others. And that, which is self-determination, is the most important. And you can't be self-determined unless you communicate.
I agree. And one of the things that Muti has taught me is being patient. So I can't speak for men. I can only speak as a woman. Patience and being understanding. And it isn't easy. We go through challenges just like any couple. It was a couple outside of the wall, you know, but it is different. Respect for one another. And I would tell anything this to anyone that counseling is okay. Getting therapy is okay. Aging therapy as a couple. I agree. It's communication, listening to each other, you know, and understanding and comprehending what each other are feeling about relationships. Because in five, we go through challenges just like any other couple. He's coming home soon. So, yeah, it's going to be great, but there will be challenges. So yesterday, we always have something in here in Pittsburgh every year called the Racial Justice Summit. This year it was, of course, online, virtual, and I sat in a conference, a workshop, that was organized by a great organization that helped women on the inside and when they were returning home, called Let's Get Free, started by Etta. That's really was a wonderful person. It was also wonderful, and other wonderful women on there as well. And I asked a question we were talking to people on the panel who returned home, like Sister Deborah Africa. There was a woman from the Pittsburgh area named Kitten. There was a woman named Rona who runs a Three Quarter House. And some other, Naomi Blunt, who is a commutation specialist here in Pennsylvania through the Lieutenant Governor's office. And I asked a question, what advice would you give to someone whose loved one is returning home after decades of being incarcerated? And patience. Everybody was like, be patient. Give them their space, you know, because they have to get used to it. Sister Debbie Africa talked about how it was a challenge crossing her street when she came home because of the cars. Using a cell phone, learning how to use a cell phone, right? So patience, and we can't stop being patient. So we have our challenges inside, but I know there are going to be challenges when he comes home. Mm-hmm. You know, if you hear that commentary from Prison Radio, June of 2007, when he was doing the commentary with you all, he said his only tribulation was women. I asked him once, what's your tribulation now? He said, my woman. Right? Because of my personality. But these are things that we work out together. Because we are both living on vibrant energy.
The Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have two phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviera de Prairie Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside.
This is an important message from the lawyers at Trudell Johnson and L'Espérance. There have been several disturbing reports about the conditions in Bordeaux and other provincial prisons in Quebec since the start of the COVID-19 crisis. We are looking into this situation in order to decide whether it is possible to take action. If you are detained in a provincial prison in Quebec, please call us at 438-384-7259 or toll-free at 1-855-552-2723. If we don't pick up, leave your name and a detailed message. We're concerned about things like whether you can access your lawyer, issues with hygiene, safety, isolation measures, and any other problems you have personally witnessed regarding your institution's response to COVID-19. Again, our number is 438-384-7259. You can also call us toll-free at 1-855-552-2723.
Bonjour. Il s'agit d'un message important des avocats de Trudell Johnston et L'Espérance. Il y a eu plusieurs rapports inquiétants sur les conditions de détention dans la prison de Bordeaux et dans d'autres prisons provinciales du Québec depuis le début de la crise COVID-19. Nous étudions actuellement cette situation afin de décider s'il est possible d'agir. Si vous êtes détenu dans une prison provinciale au Québec, veuillez nous appeler au 438-384-7259 ou à notre ligne sans frais au 1-855-552-2723. Si nous sommes dans l'impossibilité de vous répondre, laissez votre nom, votre établissement de détention et un message détaillé. Nous voulons savoir ce que vous avez personnellement constaté concernant la réponse de votre institution au COVID-19, soit en lien avec votre accès à votre avocat, aux mesures d'hygiène, de sécurité, des mesures d'isolement ou tout autre problème. Encore une fois, notre numéro est le 438-384-7259 ou notre ligne sans frais 1-855-552-2723.
This is the Prison Radio Show, coming to you straight from the CKUT radio station, located in the beautiful city of Montreal. Though we are always fighting for prisoners' rights through our news, guest interviews, and opinion pieces, a personal, heartfelt shout-out of love and support to to our brothers and sisters suffering behind bars can raise hope in a weary soul. And not only those within our 200-kilometer broadcasting area, but anyone who has access to our uploaded shows on www.ckut.ca or on CKUT 90.3 FM SoundCloud or on Prison Radio WordPress blog. We're worldwide, people. Never forget, you are not alone. We always have you in our thoughts and actions. Stay strong and keep the faith.
You're listening to a pre-recorded episode of the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and online at www.ckut.ca. The station is currently closed due to the COVID-19 pandemic, but we are still trying to air as much original content as possible. You can check out past episodes of the Prison Radio Show at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. We're at Prison Radio Show. We are also a podcast. You can find us on most podcasting apps. The Prison Radio Show airs twice a month on CKUT. We're on the air on the second Thursday of the month at 5 p.m. and the fourth Friday of the month at 11 a.m. Our next show will air on Friday, February 26th at 11 a.m. If you have any questions on anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved with the show, feel free to contact us at those phone numbers that you heard earlier, or you can email us at prison@ckut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. If you're in prison, we encourage you to call us, again, with those phone numbers that we mentioned earlier, and we encourage you to participate in the show in any way possible. You can also write to us. We're at the Prison Radio Show, or simply write PRS, care of CKUT, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3. That's it for our show. Stay tuned.
Consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had. Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You were a number. number, you weren't a name, you want to be a unit. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. The law.
Ring, 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 CKUT. Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, ding, CKUT 90.3. Take it from me. It's the best, beats the rest. 90.3 CKUT.
Good evening. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. I'm your host, Sarah Day, recording from home on Thursday, January 7th, 2021, the first show of a new year. I hope you had some time to rest, recuperate, and rejoice over the holiday season. Hopefully, in a few months, we will be back safely in theaters and rehearsal spaces. On tonight's show, a look ahead to Centaur's virtual Wildside Festival, just days away from kicking off Montreal Theater in 2021. My guests include Rose Plotek, Festival Curator and Associate Artist at Centaur.
It's hard for people to go into these more strict regulations and lockdowns, and so I'm really pleased that we can offer them something that's exciting and